Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Yeet, 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 indeed. Hope you're having a great start to your Tuesday morning. Hope you had a great Monday night as well. How you guys doing this morning?
Good, man. It's a little cold, though, but I'm good.
It's nice.
It's a little cool.
I like sleeping in the cool, though, Key. Better a little cool than a little hot at night.
Yeah, it is. I'm with that 100%. It was so good, I almost missed the show this morning.
You couldn't roll out?
Yeah.
You missed the meeting.
I was going to say, I don't mean to put our business out in the street, but you're a little more quiet this morning than you typically are.
Yeah, because Roger's voice can be annoying sometimes, you know? I don't feel like listening. Sometimes, a lot of times. But you just get, you know, a guy like that can really, you know, do something to your morning. You fill in the blank.
Well, that's an interesting start to the day. How about you, LZ?
I'm in a perfect spot. You know that place where you wake up and you're just still high enough, like you can feel the last few traces of Hydum dissipating from your body?
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That's where I was at when the alarm clock went off. So it was a pleasant wake up because I was still, you know, just a little bit buzzed. So it wasn't like aggressive. It was like, I saw rainbows and unicorns, and it's time for a brand new day.
And I had a late night too, Travis. I watched a couple extra murders into the early morning.
Anybody we know?
The husband or the wife did it?
No, it was an interesting one. So the last one episode that I watched, it was Tamara Hall a young lady was visiting in from the ring. She was visiting from Oregon. She was an Oregon student visiting her home in Reno, and she was abducted off a couch in her friend's front apartment. So it was a weird setup. First of all, the apartment was facing the street, but the door to the apartment stayed unlocked, and it was a glass door. So from the street, you could see in the house. And she was laying on the couch while all the other roommates were upstairs. But so they used the couch almost like the living room area, almost like a lobby, kind of like a waiting room. And all of the other rooms were locked. You know, their rooms were locked. It was almost like a door. Okay. And so the girl, you know, she was
abducted. I don't like where this is headed. I'm nervous already.
Well, she was abducted. And so my thing is, you know, you never want to make light of the situation. But first of all, I'm not sleeping on the street, okay, where somebody can see into my residence. And I'm not leaving the door unlocked. And the door always remained unlocked at this home because
they
said.
What town was this?
This was in Nevada, Reno, Nevada, And
was it a meth house?
No. It was some young girls, college girls, and they was partying and hanging out. It was spring break or something.
Maybe like it locked the door to start. I don't know.
They never locked the door. That's what they did. Locked the door at all. And so I watched that and that one took me until about 1 a.m.
No wonder you're tired this morning. You had nightmares from getting snatched off the couch.
No, nightmares. Trust me.
He was just shaking his doors all night. Did I lock that front door?
No, I want you to come in here. Give me a reason. I'm from the South right now.
Wait.
Those two little squirrels you got as dogs are not going to do anything to save you.
Give me a reason. I'm from the South right now. Give me a reason. Let me see if I can make something up.
You know, I had a moment when you sent me the text last night, Key, of the food that you were making. I realized something important that just kind of bummed me out. Like, you know, you kind of go through the ebbs and flows of, okay, it's not so bad, and then you just climb in the walls. You said, I need to bring you one of these. I don't know when I'm ever going to get you and your vegan food back in my life. That we're separated and we don't know when we're going to get back into the studio together. There may not be another time for you to bring me a carrot pulled pork sandwich or lemon pound cake or any of those things. It was a bit shocking. It kind of hit home last night.
I have a feeling that we'll see each other in the new year. one way or another, we'll see each other in the new year back at a studio somewhere.
Well, I hope so. I hope it takes a lot of time.
Are you running for office? You are like, we may see each other one day in the distant, near, not too far future, hopefully one day perhaps.
No, I said in the new year. I will certainly see you in 2021. When that is, I don't know. I don't believe that we will be seeing each other anytime in 2020 in a studio, but we will be seeing each other at some point in time in a studio somewhere recording something. That's just put it that way.
Ooh, new right. album.
Is the band getting back together?
I'm pretty good on the tambourine. I'm just saying that I can bang it out on the side. So yesterday, the Major League Baseball owners approved a proposal to start the Major League Baseball season around the 4th of July. That spring training 2.0 would start sometime next month, and they would try to get ready to play in their home ballparks where appropriate by the early part of July. Good news, bad news, or are we still where it are that this is just one of the logistical steps that needs to take place? Because at first blush, it looks like, okay, this is great news. And then you hear some people like Buster Olney and some other players like Sean Doolittle from the Washington Nationals say, hold on a second, we still have a lot of things to figure out.
It's good news. Regardless, I understand Buster Olney's dialed in to a degree. Players are never going to be happy when you start talking about taking finances away from them. And owners aren't going to be happy when you start asking for something that they feel that they can't give. Because you got to remember, this is not just about Major League Baseball. Some of these owners have other economic resources that have been suffering too. Some are in the food industry, some are in the hospitality industry, some are in the tech business. And so it just depends on what owner's cash flow and what it looks like. And if the owners voted on it, it's because they, one, want to continue to make money. Two, they need to continue to make money. Three, they're willing to give up as little as possible to try to make that money. And I think that the owners are doing what they feel is best. The players have to sit down and realize at some point that you either going to play or not get paid at all. And there's a bunch of people. We went through this with the NFLPA's collective bargaining agreement. There's a bunch of people that can't afford to not have baseball. And then there are those are like the Bryce Harpers of the world and the Kershaws of the world that can sit tight for 12 months and be cool. But then there's other guys that really haven't made
they need money.
They need the money. So you're going to go that back and forth. And then there's agents that will speak out that say no, no, no. Well, because they're in the area of they need either got a whole bunch of money, and then there's going to be other agents that say, nah, man, y'all need to play. So they can get some money. So you still got all of those sort of things going on.
Well, Keith, like you said, the big sticking point of this seems to be the money, that the owners want a 50-50 split. The players have not officially rejected it, but it certainly seems like they're headed that way. Let's take a listen very quickly to Buster Olney, who was on with Sarah Spain yesterday, saying that he is not optimistic that they're going to figure this out.
I am more skeptical in this hour that there will be baseball played this year than I have been at any point, just seeing all this public fighting erupt out into the open. Because you guys know, no matter which side you think is right or wrong, they're all going to lose in the court of public opinion, and they're going to be entrenched.
So you think the money is going to be the sticking point?
We're seeing that, and as I say, it's built upon already such a fragile situation when it comes to the medical side.
Yeah.
I would encourage everyone, Sean Doolittle of the Washington Nationals, one of the most thoughtful players in the game, addressed a lot of the medical questions on his Twitter feed today. Different issues have to be raised. After he posted that, I actually had some players reach out to me and say that he raised questions they hadn't even thought of. That stuff all has to be worked out, and in some respects, the more complicated side is the money.
All right, so we'll get to Sean Doolittle, the questions that he raised as well. But let's just start right here. We'll get into the parts about what the new season would look like, a short season, a universal DH, expanded rosters, all of that stuff. But just from a PR standpoint, guys, Are they really going to find a way to get this done with the health situation, from the logistics situation, and not play because of the money? Is that something that we're really talking about, that neither one of these guys are going to budge? We're talking players, we're talking owners, and they're going to decide to not have the season because they can't agree on how to carve up the money.
Well, it's going to start. It starts that way, right? It always starts that we can't agree on how to carve up the money. You're going to always get people screaming and hollering. Again, I take you back to the NFL, the PA, Aaron Rodgers. No, 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 don't sign. Somebody else. No, no, no. J.J. Watt. What a ridiculous thing. Michael Thomas. Ah! Okay, at the end of the day, everybody else is like, nah, we get this thing done. You're going to deal with that along the way. Now, mind you, then we're only in the, what is this, the 12th of May? Mm-hmm. They're talking about July 4th. So you still got basically 2 months.
Yeah, but they're not going to go to camp until they figure out the money, and that's a few weeks away.
I understand that part of it, but they're saying baseball could start 4th of July. You still have 3 weeks or so to figure out what you should do from a money standpoint. These things don't happen. It doesn't take that long to figure those things out. You could get that done in a short period of time.
All right, we'll talk about the money. We'll talk about some of the logistical things that baseball is going to try and get done, specifically that universal DH. We'll get into that and the objections from Sean Doolittle as well. That's all coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Okay, so let's start right here. Let's assume for a second that we get a green light as far as the medical component of this goes. That they say, you know what, it's safe to do it. We can go back and do it. Talk about a PR disaster. If this thing, and I'm talking about baseball coming back, the proposal would have spring training start next month, would have games start shortly thereafter at the beginning of July. If they can't get back on the field because of money, I mean, you talk about a PR nightmare. And baseball has been really good. Since the strike in 94, baseball's done a really good job of not having their economics be a part of the story. They realized how badly they screwed it up way back in 94, and since then, it's been about as amicable as you could hope, that they've gone along and gotten things done pretty quietly and on time without any threat of any sort of labor stoppage. Now, all of a sudden, in the midst of something that's the worst thing we've seen in arguably all of our lifetimes when it comes to just the disruption of your regular life, they got a green light to go play, and they're not going to do it because they can't figure out how to carve up the money. That would be a PR disaster for both sides.
I think they'll figure it out. It'll be a different split probably than what's proposed, but I think that they'll figure it out because it's clear that the owners want to get back, and they know that there's a number of players that can't afford to sit out, and there's a number of owners that really probably can't afford to continue to lose money, given that they're probably losing money in some of their other businesses. So I'm not all gloom and doom. I do believe that they'll figure the numbers out in a short period of time. If you notice baseball, it seems like that's the one league that's been, you know, continuing to reshape things over and over and over. They start off saying, we're going to do this. They say, oh, well, you know, that's not going to work. Let's go back and do this. They continue every week. It's almost like they give us a different proposal about what it is to get back on the field.
It's all about which side takes hold of the narrative first. Right now, it's still nebulous. But to your point, Travis, it's going to be a PR nightmare if money is the reason why they don't start playing. The question is, who's going to point the finger first? Who's going to be able to get a hold of the public's sympathy and go, it's their fault? Because whoever gets that power can control how history looks back on this moment. So if you're the player association and you need to respond to this, even if money is the driver, you can't say money is the driver. You have to find another reason to blame ownership, because if you say money, you look greedy. But if you just get the blame on them, even though it is money, if you can disguise it and make it pretty, you can still control the narrative and come out on the other side of this. But both sides are not going to be able to look good when this is all said and done.
Keith, take me through it. As a member of a professional sports union, if you were in a situation where you were, and just to use round numbers here so it's easy, if you were scheduled to make $10 million and all of a sudden the world had what we have right now where they said, you know, we're not going to be able to play, and then all of a sudden you got a green light and said, look, I know you're scheduled to make $10 million and we're going to prorate it That was the original proposal. And now we're saying, you know what, we're just going to take all the money and cut it in half, and you guys get half, and we're going to keep half. Would you be okay with that? Would you? What would your response be to that if they kept moving the target of what they were going to pay you?
I mean, I probably would be okay because I'm not a selfish person like that. And when I look at what everybody else has to endure, there's some other players that are around me. I think about the other players as well in this. I don't just think about myself. And it's a short-lived situation. It's not permanent. It's something that may happen in 2020 season, but not going to happen beyond that. Mm-hmm. Then I'm okay with making some adjustments to get back on the field, not just for myself, but also for the fans, also for my teammates, players that may not make the $10 million, that may only, you know, making the minimum.
$100,000.
Yeah, making the – so I'm okay with that for a short period of time. I think I could swallow that. But if you, you know, if you're talking about all of a sudden we locking this in for the next 3 years, now obviously we have a different conversation.
And that's what the union is objecting to, is saying, look, that they don't want this to be the first step towards a salary cap league, that the baseball is the one league that doesn't have it, and that's what they're trying to avoid.
Yeah, and look.
Oh, just opening the door.
If that's the case, then that's a different conversation. Now you're opening the door for something that you're being sneaky, and now you're trying to do something beyond where we're at. Once we get back to the normal life and fans are back in the stadium, then I expect for my pay to be back where it was supposed to be.
Sure.
Because I understand the business. I understand that you depend on 40% of the revenue coming in to pay the players or the gates in the merchandising. I understand all that. And if there's no gates and there's no merchandising and there's no concessions, then there's no money. I get that part. But you also are going to be paid on the TV and radio revenue that's coming in, and whatever those numbers are, without the numbers of the gate receipts and what's in the stadium, you're certainly going to be making less money. So therefore, you feel like you should be paying less money to the players. I get it. I understand it. Not a big deal for now.
And then, of course, there's the part of just changing everything up. And there's an expansion of the playoff field, 10 to 14. Obviously, the season would be cut in half, 82-game season. There would be home stadiums where you can't do it. And then there's this part of it, a universal designated hitter, where the National League would have to take on the role of the American League and have a designated hitter on the roster. Of all the stuff that we're talking about, and I'm jumping way ahead here, guys, the National League adopting a designated hitter might be the one thing that I would like to see stay post-pandemic, because I don't need to see Clayton Kershaw swing a bat. I don't need to see Walker Buehler go up there and lay down a bunt or strike out on three pitches. If we can get a ninth bat in the lineup in the National League, this is good news. This should be here to stay. This should be a permanent proposal.
I couldn't disagree with you more. Could not disagree with you more. It's all part of the strategy. This is how we criticize managers. You're trying to make it so easy for all the managers. No, I want you to look at the pitch count and see it's at 88 and see you're in the fifth and it's a tied up game, but there's a man on second. What you going to do, dog?
Exactly why. Here's the thing, LZ. The pitcher batting makes that decision easier, not harder. The pitcher batting makes it easy, because if I'm down by a run in the fifth inning and my guy's coming up, I have to take him out because I got to put another bat in. The decision becomes much harder on when to take him out when I exclusively need to make that decision based on how he's pitching, not because his turn in the batting order is coming up. I want to see a pitcher have to go through nine guys, not eight. What's worse than seeing you got two guys on, two out, and all of a sudden here comes the eighth guy. Oh, walk him. And now the pitcher comes up, and I got to just strike that guy out on three or four pitches and move it along. Yeah, I get the idea of it being like it used to be, baseball strategy and all these. The fact of the matter is very few of these guys can execute a bat. The bunt is stupid and antiquated, and almost nobody uses it anymore. The decision to take him out is made for the manager in those situations. The sooner we get rid of that, the better.
Yeah, but if your pitcher is rolling, but you're in a situation where you need a run, you have to decide, you keep your pitcher in who's rolling, or to your point, do you sacrifice his outing even though you have a man in scoring position? I love watching that scenario every single time. I love watching the strategy. I love putting pressure on a bullpen to say, okay, we're going to do this, so you guys got to keep up what he's already set. I love that aspect of baseball. And to, you know, I get what you're saying in terms of the analytics and the likely outcome, but I'm not thinking about the possible scoring. I'm thinking about the decision of whether or not you keep in an arm that's rolling. If the arm isn't rolling, then the decision is easy. But to your point, if Clayton Kershaw has thrown a two-hitter and we're in the sixth inning and he's only thrown like 70 pitches, are you going to take him out if you're down and you have a man in scoring position? I love that dynamic of it all.
Mike Tyson dropped another video yesterday. Are we going to see it? I sure hope so. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
So maybe there'll be baseball, maybe there won't. Football, basketball, hockey. We're trying to figure out which team sports are going to come back first and in which order. But individual sports, we're already seeing start to come back. We saw a UFC card last weekend that went off, and boxing seems to be not too far behind. Mike Tyson, guys, dropped another video yesterday of him hitting the mitts, and I get it. I know, Raj, that the mitts don't hit back. I get all these things, but my man looks pretty fast, and he looks like he's still got quite a bit of snap behind those punches, and I don't know how long we're going to have to wait to get anything back, but if Mike Tyson is in the mix for things when we do get back, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with a guy trying to get into shape. I'm fine with that. I mean, he's been out for a while, and he may have a gut and all of those things. You're judging him on today and not tomorrow, and that's where people go wrong at when they start looking at a non-finished product. We go back to, we could talk about Michael Jordan's baseball short term, whatever. We could talk about George Farmer. We could talk about a lot of different athletes that get to a certain age and haven't done something in a long time, and you look at them and you go, oh, man, that's awkward. They can't do this. And then they start to get into this type of shape that their bodies allow them to, as long as they continue to keep doing it and they're dedicating themselves to it. Mike Tyson doesn't seem like the type of guy, to me, having been around sports for a long time, having been a professional athlete, that will put himself out in harm's way and not be ready to go. And I don't think his trainers and people around him, if in fact he's doing something bigger than three rounds, that they will put him out there if he's not ready to go.
Let me tell you something, man. Boxing is hard. Boxing is hard. It is so freaking hard. The time I spent with boxers working for DAZN, my appreciation for what they have to deal with mentally and physically shot through the roof. Like, I always understood it was hard. It's hard. So this notion that, you know, you see a video clip and that can translate into being able to go toe to toe with someone five rounds. It's I don't know who the opponent's going to be, but even if it's the same age, if it's the same age and someone who's still boxing somewhere in some foreign nation that we don't get to see very often, they're going to win.
Okay. There's two separate things going on here. There's number one, that can he get back to become one of the great fighters? No, of course not. He's 53 years old and he's out of shape, and that's not going to happen. That's different than
he's getting in shape
to fight again. I'm not asking to put him in there against Tyson Fury. I'm not asking him to go in there and fight one of the best in the business. I'd like to see Mike Tyson in the ring again.
If he fights Holyfield. If you could dust off Lennox Lewis, well, not Lennox. Lennox has got kind of chill.
No, it doesn't have to be one of those guys. You know who Danny Williams is? Oh, that's a guy who knocked him out before and then, like, third. You know who Kevin McBride is? That's the last guy to face him.
All right, Freddie.
And then the sixth round, he made Tyson quit. Tyson did an intentional headbutt, tried to break his arm, and then he just quit in his stool. That's a Tyson of 20 years ago. I don't want to see this.
Hey, because it's hard, Raj. Here's it's my hard. $100. I am in. I don't. If he's breaking arms and headbutting guys, I want to see Mike Tyson come in with the towel, with the sockless shoes, with his head going back and forth. I want to see Iron Mike in the ring.
You can go on Instagram right now and see video of my buddy Sugar Ray Leonard giving you fast hands. right now.
Right now.
Like, I spent plenty of time with Sugar Ray. He physically is in perfect shape, especially for a man of his age, but he's in perfect shape anyway. And he would give you fast hands for days. And he tells you to drop it hard. No, man, I'm not going back in there. Crazy.
Well, if Tyson decides that that's what he wants to do, and he gets himself into shape to do it, I'm one like you, Travis. I'm going to watch it.
Of course.
And it's I want to see him do it if he can do it.
I'm going to be rooting for him. Exactly. I'm going to want to see it. And keep in mind, this was a joke for George Foreman right up until it wasn't. I mean, how often were we all laughing about George Foreman fighting on undercards and in the middle of nowhere fighting against plumbers and truck drivers and TV repairmen, and it was all hilarious until he kept knocking them all out, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's put him in there against the sort of real guy. He took him out. Put him in there against a little bit better. The next thing you know, he's the champ again. And I'm under no delusions that Mike Tyson is going to be the champ again. But just dismissing it out of hand, I want to see it. I want to see him go through the process.
But there's a difference, though. George Foreman wasn't in his 50s when he came back. He was still in his mid-40s. So you're looking at George Foreman, add on 10 years, and then say, I'm coming back. I mean, I know it doesn't sound like in your 40s, it's that huge of a difference. There's a big difference between your 40s and your 50s as an athlete.
Again, the guy is training. I want to see it. That's all. I just want to see a transformation.
LZ.
Let me see what the transformation is.
There's a button on your TV remote that says buy the Mike Tyson fight for $69.99. You going to hit the button or not?
No, dog. I'm not buying that.
You're not going to buy it.
No, now
you're not.
The brother's getting back in the ring. You ain't gonna support the brother.
If it's on television, I'll probably watch it. If it's streaming on DAZN or something, I'll probably watch it. But if you're asking me to reach in my quarantine pocket and pull out $70 to watch Mike Tyson, maybe make it through two rounds because I'm curious, I'll wait for the Twitter clips.
But you do understand he's not coming back next week. This fight is—he's not. Getting in the ring next week.
It's still going to be $70.
Yeah, but he might be training for next year, for next summer.
Anybody surprised that Mike Tyson's a Clippers fan? Because at the end of that clip, he's in there in an LA Clippers t-shirt. I'm like, oh, wow, Mike's a Clipper fan. I had no idea.
I think Spike just gave it to him.
Well, he was wearing it.
He was wearing it. But it looked like Spike just gave it to him. It was too white. Like it looked so new. I was like, yeah, somebody just gave that to you just to wear that day. I don't know if he's rolling Clipper gear all the time because that t-shirt, it's more crispy. Travis, you know I'm the king of running out and getting crispy for something. but I don't get crispy to go work out.
Do we all agree? Because, Key, you and I are on the same page on this, but he's getting ready for something, right? This is not just him posting videos of him breaking a sweat and saying, oh, hey, look, it's Mike Tyson throwing his hands around a little bit. Isn't that cool? He's putting down some bricks to get ready for something, right?
I think he is, but what's that something? Like, you know, by the time he – who knows? You say, well, does he want to see Tyson Fury? By the time he get to Tyson Fury, maybe Tyson Fury got knocked out a few times. So who knows? I don't know what it is. But I want to see Mike Tyson get his body back right and get in the ring. And if he can fight beyond two or three rounds, then do it. And if not, then okay.
I'll add this one caveat. If he's fighting somebody in a similar situation with a similar brand recognition, I might watch that. I might pay to watch him fight Evander Holyfield. I might pay to watch him fight someone of his contemporaries who's also working to get back in shape. That might be
so let me ask you this,
but even
though,
LZ? With that being said, that still sounds like the Expendables to me.
So, LZ, watching Mayweather in Pacquiao, not Pacquiao, but McGregor was cool.
I didn't do that. I didn't watch that.
It was cool for people? People signed up for that.
People bought it. I mean, people signed up for it. It was a sideshow, but people paid their money to see it.
Listen, I'm not here to talk about people's taste. I mean, The Masked Singer is a hit show. I can't gauge people's taste, but what I can say is that I personally am not going to spend money on certain things because I have no interest in seeing them. I will pay some money if it's a big name versus Mike Tyson and they're the same age, and I'm just curious as to which senior citizen can make it through to the end.
Man, make up your mind, man. One minute you ain't gonna pay to see Mike. Now you gonna pay to see Mike. Put up a poll.
All right, the top 10 guys that LZ wants to see Mike Tyson fight. That's coming up next on the Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, let's get right to it, LZ. I'm excited to see what we have for today's top 10.
Well, gentlemen, as you may or may not know, something miraculous happened today, this day in sports. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Michael Jordan won his 500th title. Home run.
It happened 1 year ago. Ooh. Kawhi Leonard hit the jumper that advanced him beyond the 76ers into the Eastern Conference Final. Do you want to hear the sound? Let's play the sound.
Yes. It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
No! There it is. There's the call. You can actually hear the ball bouncing 19 times on the rim before it goes through. And then, of course, there's the cheering afterwards. So this is my top 10 list of great feelings in sports. Whether you are a fan or a participant, when this happens, it's just an amazing feeling. So it's top 10 feelings in sports. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Coming in at number 10. Lifting a PR. Lifting a PR. Anybody who's ever benched or worked out in the gym understands what it means to hit 5 more pounds, 10 more pounds than what you're used to doing. It's an amazing feeling. Do you know what I'm talking about, Travis?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Key, do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know about 5 more pounds.
50?
50 more pounds? I mean, yeah, usually a PR goes up in increments of 5 or 10, but if you jump all the way by 50, then, you know, go ahead and knock yourself out.
Steroids.
It's got a little help along the way.
You got a lot of help.
I do 5 pounds with a burrito.
Number 9, finishing a race. Whether it's a 5K, 10K, Ironman, marathon, training for a race and actually finishing it is an amazing, amazing feeling. And this has got to be true whether you're a professional like Lance Armstrong, speaking of a little help, or if you're just doing a local turkey trot. That's 5K. If you train for it and you actually finished it, it's an amazing, amazing feeling.
The turkey trot in Dana Point at the end of the day is my favorite thing ever because it means I get to go drink and eat.
All right, see?
What if you finished the race with a little bit of help?
Well, you know, it's still an amazing feeling. It's still an amazing feeling. Number 8, of course, you know, I got to put in tennis. Serving it out. Serving out a match, whether it's professional or recreational, feels good because it's the hardest thing to do in the entire game of tennis is actually keeping your nerves together to serve it out. Number 7, game-winning interception. Now, I remember my favorite interception. It happened in high school. It was just before we were supposed to go back in because, you know, we were outside playing for lunchtime. And they threw a Hail Mary. You know what I'm talking about. Old dude threw a Hail Mary, and if they caught it, then they win, and I got the interception, and it was over. Everybody was like, yeah, yeah. It's like this amazing feeling.
Recess interceptions. I'm pretty impressed.
Oh, dude. I still remember it because I was like, everybody was like, man, you the man. You the man. I said, yeah, you know, I can go pro if I want to, but I just want to stay home because I like Detroit. Number 6, game-winning basketball shot.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
No! Hitting the game-winning shot never gets old. It just never gets old. It pick up, watching it in professional, college, regardless of gender. Game-winning basketball shots are filled with so much drama and so much anticipation, and all eyes are on you. And once you hit the shot, that's it. It's a wrap, and it's just an amazing, amazing feeling. Number 5. Now, number 5, actually, in retrospect, may be a little low for me personally, but in the landscape of scope or sports, I think it's perfect. And that's a hole-in-one.
Ooh.
A hole-in-one, even in putt-putt tennis, or putt-putt golf, rather, just feels good, and you get excited. Like, no matter what, a hole-in-one if you're watching your buddy get close to a hole in one, it's exciting. Like, there's something about getting that little golf ball in the hole in one shot, regardless of what the, you know, what we're talking about, just feels great.
I've played golf my entire life and have played golf with my friends my entire life, my dad my entire life. I have never seen one, never had one. So, yes, I would like to experience that at some point in my life. I'll take your word for it.
Hole in one. You've never even done it in putt-putt?
Oh, yeah, that doesn't count. But, yes, I've
absolutely
had one.
Absolutely does
too
count.
No, it does not. Continue. Number four.
Number four, knocking out the opponent. Speaking of Mike Tyson, mano a mano, girlo a girlo. I'm not quite sure what the correct Spanish is. But knocking out the opponent, whether it's UFC stuff, whether it's boxing, whether it's wrestling, any combat sport, and you come out on top, it's just an amazing, amazing feeling. And that's include wrestling, which I've done a lot of, like many of us have. And when you get your buddy down, you get your elbow in his face, and he's tapping you out, it's like, yeah, don't mess with me. Number three, game-winning soccer goal. I mean, it's number three just for the call alone. The game-winning soccer goal is so amazing because it's actually the only goal that people really remember.
It's like
no matter what happened during the course of a match, you always remember how it ended. You may not even remember the score, but you always remember how it ends. And then, of course, in professional sports or in, like, you know, the Olympics or the World Cup, when they get to take their shirts off and slide around and be celebrating, cheered, it just looks like an amazing, amazing feeling. Number two, catching a game-winning touchdown.
And, of course, for the upstart 49ers, they're 6 yards away from Pontiac. Third and three. The right side, possibly, Montana. Looking, throwing in the end zone. Great score!
We all remember the game-winning touchdowns. We all know the cheers. Pretty much like basketball, it's a, you know, highly anticipated moment in the game, and you're staring and you're on the edge of your seat. The only reason why I think it's better than basketball is just because there's so many moving parts. In basketball, it's pretty static. You see the one guy whip the ball and the one defender, typically maybe two, and you kind of know where all the action is. But game-winning touchdowns are so amazing because there's still so many moving parts going on. And especially if it's not a bang-bang play, it has to be a developed play. It's just awesome to watch. I'm assuming, Key, I'm sure you can tell me, it's an amazing feeling to have.
Well, which one? I've had so many in my career.
Oh, my God.
It is. It's I think the one game-winning touchdown that I remember – well, I remember all of them, but the one that felt just really special was when I was in Tampa Bay. We played against the Detroit Lions, and Tony Dungy was at the last – it was his last year, and I don't remember exactly what game it was, but it was probably the – probably about the 10th game of the year, somewhere in that area. And it was rumors swirling around. If we lost to Detroit, they were going to blow him out after the game. And I had to change the play in the huddle with Brad Johnson. We changed the play as we broke the line of scrimmage. And he threw a ball at the back of the end zone. And I basically took the ball off the kid's head like soup in a bowl. And we win the game, and we go on, obviously, to the playoffs, but we lose to Philly, and they fire Dungy at the end of the year. But that stuck in my mind because we got the, you know, I basically helped move the needle forward, opposed to him being pushed out that day after the game, which would have been stupid anyway. It was stupid to fire him at the end of the year. But I remember that one big time. But there's other ones, too. I mean, you know, there's one in Dallas against the Seahawks. There's one in college against Stanford at the end of the game. We're losing to keep our Rose Bowl hopes alive. We drive down the field, capped out. There's other ones, you know. There's plenty.
And number one, still, and probably always will be, is that sexy, empowering feeling of hitting a home run.
But the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Woo, I was there.
Hair on my arm is up yes. all over again. Every
oh
single
God.
Time. Every
high fly ball in the deep
right about hitting
field.
A home run. That's
she
just
is
absolutely
gone.
Amazing, no matter what the sport. So, that's my top 10 list of amazing feelings in sports.
Back all right, I think MVP is also on that list for sure. And Vegas is already telling us who the NFL MVP is going to be. Key's going to let us know if they got it right. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.